This is The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick. It's good to have you with us today. Let's talk about customer ratings for a minute. We've been poking around customer reviews today. The Olive Garden restaurant in the middle of Times Square here in New York, Olive Garden's Yelp review, 3 out of 5 stars. That's 60%. Justice League, in theaters now, made for the cool price of $600 million and widely panned. Polls on Rotten Tomatoes at 41%. And President Donald Trump, who has the worst approval rating of any modern president at this point in his term, hovering around 35%, according to the Gallup tracking poll. Well, you are the customer for the GOP tax plan winding its way through Congress now. Well, you and corporate America are the customers. And your customer rating for the GOP tax plan? 29. That's right, 29. Outpolled by Justice League, by Olive Garden, by the president himself. Gallup says that just 29% of Americans approve of the Senate tax plan. The Quinnipiac poll, same result, 29. But forward it goes on to conference negotiations with the House. President Trump, he's been posting customer ratings for the tax plan. Here he was on Tuesday.
The taxes we're so thrilled about, so popular, and I think something is going to be coming out of conference pretty quickly as opposed to long-term. I think it's going to go pretty quickly.
Well, will it go pretty quickly? That's the goal. There are some obstacles, though, and a couple of Republican senators who still have the power to give the ultimate bad review to this tax bill would not recommend. 0 stars. Richard Rubin, U.S. tax policy reporter for The Wall Street Journal. Hi, Richard.
Hey there, Todd.
Great to have you back on, Richard. Look, the House and Senate have gotten to work now on final negotiations on a tax bill. How close are they, and are they going to produce something that the president's going to be able to give a 5-star rating to?
Well, they're making some progress. They've been talking even before the formal conference starts, which is pretty typical here in Congress. They've got a bunch of things that they do have to work out. So I try and think of it in three kinds of different ways. One is what you could think of as switches. So there's a bunch of things that were in one bill, not in the other. So like the House repeals the medical expense deduction, the Senate doesn't. It's an on-off switch. They can just pick like which one we do. Then there's like dials, right? And you could say, well, you know, the House sets the top tax rate at 39.6 for individuals. The Senate sets it at 38.5. They can meet in the middle. There's a whole bunch of numerical things where they could do that. And then there's sort of like swapping blueprints, right? And so there's things like how you tax pass-through businesses, which is this whole new complicated area of law they're writing, or international tax rules. And there you might see them pick one or the other as the starting point and then tweak it a little bit. So they've got a bunch of work to do because the two bills are different, but the architecture of them is the same. And so it's really just about, to use the seasonal joke, making a list and checking it twice and just kind of going down and seeing who exactly, in each of those areas, what they've got the votes for.
No, come on, Richard. You just mixed metaphors. You started with switches and dials. I was following you, and then you landed on Santa's list.
It's been a long month, man.
Well, no, look, hey, it has been for us all. Trust me. Look, Richard, okay, switches and dials I get. There are a couple of potential hammers here, though, too, right? Because it was touch and go for a long time in the Senate, in the GOP Senate last week. The bill passed out after Mitch McConnell agreed to some demands from a couple senators like Susan Collins of Maine, Jeff Flake of Arizona, that they say have to be met when this bill comes out of final negotiations. Let's start with Susan Collins. What does she want?
Well, she's concerned about the repeal of the individual mandate to have health insurance, and she wants to make sure that what's known as Alexander Murray, a sort of bill to shore up individual insurance markets, comes along with it. She's been a little less than certain about whether that has to happen first before she'll vote for a final tax bill. But she's also been clear that she has not committed to vote for a final tax bill, in part because we don't have a final tax bill yet for her to look at. So her vote is open. But remember, even if she votes no, the Republicans still have 50 votes, so and would be able to pass this with Vice President Pence breaking the tie. So in some ways, they don't need her vote coming back. It obviously gives them some cushion in case anyone else gets a little nervous about where this bill's going.
Well, what about Jeff Flake of Arizona?
He had secured a promise to be part of discussions on immigration, and he had also got some changes to what's known as expensing, so writing off business investments. you know, well, again, we'll have to see. He's obviously been very, very critical of the president, but he's willing to vote for the bill. So it's, and he hasn't necessarily put out that sort of, it has to have XYZ before I'll vote for it again.
So,
but here's the yeah. thing, though. One thing that has come out in the past couple of days, there's sort of this, you know, tax law fan fiction out there that that the House might just pass the Senate bill, and you could sort of see that as plausible, right? That would make the Senate not have to vote again. But one thing the Senate did in its last minute rush, as we've been writing about in the Journal this week, is they repealed the corporate. They reinstated the corporate alternative minimum tax, which is something that almost nobody paid attention to, but they stuck it back in there at the last minute. And the way that they did it, and I can explain further if you want, but the way they did it basically undermined the research and development tax credit, fouled with their new international tax system, and caused a whole messed up the municipal bond market if they do it. So the bill they've got would be a mess if they actually enacted it, according to every tax expert we talk to. So they're going to have to deal with that in conference, which means both the House and Senate would have to vote again.
Yeah, that's not fanfic. That's cold, hard reality. Look, Jeff Flake and his immigration asks has a lot to do with DACA, the Deferred Action Program in immigration. And we're going to be talking about that in just a minute, what Jeff Flake wants to see from a DACA fix and a growing number of Republicans, too. Whether it sinks a tax bill or not is another question. But Richard, before we let you go, here's another metaphor for your stack, wild card. What about the election in Alabama? What if Democrat Doug Jones were to win there and Republican Roy Moore didn't come to the Senate?
Well, this is a bit of a wild card. We don't know exactly how long it would take to seat someone from Alabama, so they would have a cushion of 8 to 10 to 12 days, maybe more. No pun intended, to get something voted on before the new senator is seated. And again, remember, if Collins is, you know, you have to sort of think about all the levers and potential votes here about how that works. So, yeah, that's a potential problem. And that's one of the things among just the general pressure that's pushing them to try and get something done as soon as possible.
Watching policy, watching demands from senators, watching the conference committee, even watching Alabama. With all of his metaphors in hand, Richard Rubin, tax policy reporter for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks, man.
Yep.
Well, we just talked about Senator Jeff Flake's moves. He says are designed to help get a fix to the DACA program that's winding its way through Congress. You'll remember that back in September, President Trump announced he's rescinding deferred action for childhood arrivals, telling Congress, it's on you. Make a decision by March 5th of 2018. And that move left more than 800,000 DACA recipients in a kind of a limbo, unsure of what their status will be if Congress can't make a new law, and even if they might be targets for deportation. That has Democrats and a growing number of Republicans, in fact, working to get a deal before March and a leverage game starting behind the scenes on Capitol Hill. Adriana Gomez-Licón is Hispanic Affairs reporter for the AP. She's here to talk about Congress and about the families watching to see what will happen to them. Adriana, thanks for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me, Todd.
Well, what has life been like for DACA recipients since the president's announcement in September that he was going to rescind this program?
Well, first of all, many of them only had 1 month to get documents together, money together, to send in their applications for renewal. So it's been kind of hectic for some of them. And then for the rest, it's been like, well, what may happen after March? Can I plan my life? Can I go on with my job? So it's been pretty uncertain. Right now, what the Department of Homeland Security is saying is that if you turn in your documents before October 5th, they will consider some applications, but they do need to show proof that they submitted them before the October 5th deadline. So no one is applying anymore right now.
October 5th is passed, so if you miss that window, people just are waiting and watching.
Exactly. They're waiting, basically watching Congress to see what they do.
Well, let's go inside Congress right now. Democrats are trying to up the pressure to pass some sort of DACA fix with, as I said, an increasing number of Republicans, Jeff Flake in the Senate, as we mentioned, and some House Republicans, too. What's the state of play?
Well, the Democrats have a lot of support. They think they have enough support to pass what they call the DREAM Act, which would actually include more people than just DACA recipients. And then we have at least a group of 34 House Republicans who are asking Paul Ryan to deal with this, to bring it up to vote at least and before the year ends.
before the end of the year? And do you have a sense of what that policy might look like? Because we talk about a DACA fix, and there are lots of different forms that can take. There's the DREAM Act, as you mentioned, and it could be something weaker.
Right. There's another bill called Recognizing Americans Children Act. Some Republicans are saying that there will be a merge of both of them, but they're still in discussion, and we don't know what it's going to look like. I mean, of course, what Dreamers are hoping for is that it's like a permanent status. Basically, they can live here, they can work here. They no longer have this sort of stave off of their deportation. They're just here as permanent residents.
Adriana, what kind of pressure is on Paul Ryan, though, in the House? I mean, it's very possible, I suppose, to have a grand coalition of Democrats and, as you said, 30, 40, 45 Republicans who want a fix. I don't think Paul Ryan's conservative base and the Freedom Caucus want a fix at all. They don't want this fix, and they might be putting enormous pressure on him to back away here.
They do. I mean, they are putting some pressure on Paul Ryan. There was the news last week of Congressman Carlos Curbelo saying that he won't approve any spending bill that funds the government after the year ends if DACA is not approved but not even taken into consideration. But Paul Ryan has actually said, why do we make a December deadline when the deadline is March? That's the deadline President Donald Trump gave in September when he rescinded DACA. So he's saying that December deadline is just artificial. We're making it up. This is not our priority right now.
So that means, Adriana, that all of the DACA recipients and their families, 800,000 people or more, might be watching a government shutdown fight or something like it at the end of the month, not worried just about a shutdown, but whether or not they're going to be able to stay in the country.
Well, yeah, the discussions of the shutdown there's a lot of different ways in which it could go. They could still fund it to December 22nd, or now they're talking December 30th. So we don't know exactly what that's going to look like. But for these Dreamers, I mean, I have talked to Dreamers who are actually going to lose status in December, and they were not able to renew it because they didn't meet the October 5th deadline. And they're really just really hoping for a December fix. And likely what it's looking right now is that it's still not going to be considered, according to what Paul Ryan has said.
Adriana, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me, Todd.
Adriana Gomez-Licon, Hispanic Affairs reporter for the AP.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. Since then, New York Public Radio's rigorous journalism has gone on to win a Peabody Award and a DuPont Columbia Award, among others. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.